see, you were married in 1933.
Yes.
Well, can you tell me just a few things about your wife, your wife's name?
Her name was Eleanor Pope. I met her at a summer resort when she was 16 and I was 20, and it stuck. But we're still doing pretty well.
Good.
She finally finished school about the time I started at DuPont. But I didn't have any money, and I wasn't ready to get married.
When you say finished school...
She finished a B.A. A.B. at Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
About the time I went to DuPont. She would like to have gotten married right away, but I didn't have any money.
Mm-hmm.
And times have changed since. All we need is a credit card, I guess. But we were married the following Christmas. That is after 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have very much in reserve, but... We managed all right.
Okay. Has she had any influence on your career? She's not a chemist, I take it.
Not a chemist, no interest in it. She's interested in some of the personalities in it.
Mm-hmm. And maybe I should talk to her.
many of them have visited us at home,
mm-hmm.
both from this country and abroad. She has been cooperative in the entertaining and done a real good job at raising our two daughters. And,
your daughters influenced at all by your scientific career?
No. One of them thought she was pretty good at mathematics. But when she got to Stanford and found she was competing with the engineers, she decided she wasn't so hot after all. And she went into speech therapy and teaching.
Mm-hmm.
Neither my wife nor my two daughters showed any interest whatsoever in any of them going to Chicago. But interestingly enough, two granddaughters are thinking, well, one of them is a junior there now.
Oh.
And the other one is going to apply there as well as at some other places.
That's interesting.
So after skipping a generation, we'll have one or two back there.
Yeah.
One daughter is interested in economics and politics. The one that's at Chicago now. The other is interested in science or mathematics or medicine.
Mm-hmm. All right. So maybe
both quite good students.
Mm-hmm. These are daughters of your oldest.
My older daughter.
Your
yes.
older daughter.
My younger daughter has two sons who haven't picked a career yet. The one is apparently a remarkably bright kid. The other isn't any dummy. Tends more to be an athlete like his father.
Mm-hmm. Your oldest daughter's name is?
Carolyn with a Y.
Okay, and the youngest one?
Is Jean.
With two N's and an E, or just?
Four letters.
Four letters, okay. we can get some very fancy names these
yes.
days. Let's see. In what year did you return to Chicago? You left
January 1936.
Okay. Now, what was the occasion of your leaving DuPont and coming back to Chicago?
Well, Karsh made me an offer to be his research assistant.
Mm-hmm.
He had asked me a year sooner, I think, but I thought I ought to give DuPont a better try.
Mm-hmm.
Then the man he got apparently left, and he tried me again, and I decided that I was ready to go, while DuPont wasn't a bad place, there wasn't anything that appealed to me on a long-term basis.
Mm-hmm.
There.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went back with a title of instructor, and my chief job was to service his crew of students and postdocs. Mm-hmm. And there, I guess there were 20 or more of them. Some of them got a fair amount of attention from him, but many of them did not. And he was away a good deal of mm-hmm. time on consulting and committee work, other sorts of things.
Now, when you were a student there, did he have that kind of arrangement, or there weren't enough?
There weren't enough.
I see.
And I guess he didn't have enough money or influence.
Mm-hmm.
He had just been there.
I know what I forgot to ask you. What were you making when you first went to DuPont? Do you remember?
$2,400.
Everybody seems to remember their first salary.
Yeah.
And when you went, and how much did Karash offer you to go back?
$2,400.
I see. Okay, so it wasn't at least a
cut. Well, I had had a raise at DuPont in the meantime, mm-hmm. not very much.
Okay. Who was the chairman at Chicago at the time you came back? Although now you probably...
I think it was Schlesinger.
Mm-hmm.
Stieglitz was retired, but he had been drafted to continue his organic chemistry course.
I see.
And I don't know whether Schlesinger had the title of head or chairman of the executive committee or chairman or what, but for practical purposes, mm-hmm. he was running things.
Yes. Fellow who ended up being executive secretary, was Jim Parsons around, or that wasn't until much later?
That was later.
Okay.
I think he may have been a student sometime while I was at Chicago, mm-hmm. but I think he was at one of the city colleges.
Mm-hmm.
Is that correct?
I just don't remember.
Okay.
I was going to go down and talk to him sometime if I can still find him. He came through Brooklyn College after he retired from Chicago. And I guess you've already told me pretty much how the Karash Group was run by that time. Do you remember? Yeah, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I think something has crossed your mind, and I'd like to hear what it was.
Well, I used to go around and encourage him to clean up. Walling resented this, but he told me much later that he does that to his students.
How in general was the group run? Karash would talk to some people, but you were sort of in charge of the group.
I kept things moving between the times that he talked to them,
mm-hmm.
and had a good deal to say about how they worked on the goals that he had set.
Okay, so he set the problems.
He set the problems.
Mm-hmm.
I did much of the execution and much of the writing up, at least in the first draft.
I see. Uh-huh. I've heard some rumors about the relationships between the people at the University of Illinois and the Karash people or the Chicago people. Do you remember much about that?
Yes. My wife worked for, or lived with and worked for around the house, George L. Clark in her last year at the University of Illinois. Does the name register with you? He was the x-ray expert down there.
Okay.
And so she met some of the staff. And on one occasion, Roger Adams and his wife drove her up to Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
for a holiday mm-hmm. or something, and the question of Karash came up. Roger told her in no uncertain terms that I would never get anywhere as long as I was associated with Karash.
I suppose we're all allowed some mistakes.
Well, the situation, I think, was this. Karash was a loner. He didn't have good relations with most of his contemporaries, partly because he didn't care, I think, and partly because he wasn't inclined to play ball and politics with him. And so he got very few students from the leading chemistry teachers in the country. Mm-hmm. They came in from the smaller places or people who had a special connection or something. Rowland came in because he'd already been through Harvard. His father was a Chicago alumnus. Mm-hmm. Another one came in because he was well off financially and his father was in the chemical business. And he came there. Those were probably among the two smartest people.
Who was the other fellow? I know Walling.
May. Ernest May. And he was with the May Chemical in New Jersey for many years. Mm-hmm. He was a real bright guy, too. Now, these are the students I supervised with Carr. Another very bright one was James A. Norton, who was a sort of an oddball, and didn't get along very well, either in industry or in academic work, and finally ended up working for the Champion spark plug division. But he was something of a boy wonder. I think he started at 16 or something mm-hmm. like that. There were some other pretty good ones, but quite a number were pretty ordinary. Mm-hmm. And I think that, in general, the average of Carr's student wasn't as good as that as it was in many of the other universities at the time.
I see. Yeah. So he just had people working through simple problems and...
There's another one that did fairly well. Ralph Danley. Does that name register?
No, I'm afraid not.
Was one of Carr's students. He went to Western Reserve mm-hmm. and worked on many aspects of free radicals until mm-hmm. he retired. But... Herb Brown was a postdoc for Carr's. Mm-hmm. I guess I don't need to say anything about him.
Was this before you left, or...?
Well, I was an instructor there.
Okay.
Brown was a postdoc. And, as a matter of fact, he may have taken a course or two from me as a graduate student.
Mm-hmm. Now, late in, I have a list of people that ended up coming in. What was your relationship to James Sr.?
He was an interesting character. And we were on good terms. I liked to listen to him. He perhaps did more for me in learning how to write a paper than the whole English department did at Chicago.
Westheimer said exactly the same thing to me, so it's very interesting that...
When I wrote this, Walling and I wrote this review mm-hmm. on the peroxide effect...
Yeah, he's acknowledged in the back of it. I was going to ask...
Senior went over with me paragraph by paragraph.
Mm-hmm.
And this was the best instruction I guess I ever had. Mm-hmm. Maybe it isn't enough, but it's the best I had.
What was his role at Chicago?
He was, I guess, something like a research associate. He was privately well off and just preferred to amuse himself at Chicago rather than taking a regular job somewhere.
And
he got a fair amount or into the workings of the department. He gave a course occasionally, and he liked to talk to the other faculties, and was usually in a very loud voice, very confident.
Yeah. Well, that's good. He certainly served a good purpose if he taught both you and Frank Westheimer how to write.
Whatever it is.
One of the next papers you checked off was the very, very short paper that ended up in the Journal of the Chemical Society of Industry on the edition of HBR to Butadiene. And you felt that that was one of your more significant papers or results.
Well, I guess this was a preview of another paper, and of course Koresh originated the problem. Young and Winstein at that time had been studying allylic rearrangements, starting out with allylic bromide. Mm-hmm. And this came to our attention rather forcefully when we started looking at the addition of HBR to butadiene.
Mm-hmm.
And what I think was important was that this showed that the whole business of addition of reagents to dienes was a real mess and had never been done right.
Mm-hmm.
I remember I don't remember it well enough to come on.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I don't have a the ionic product I was a little bothered by, because for some reason it turned out to be the 2-bromo-2-butene, and I was wondering whether that was a mistake in the article, or that is the 1-2 addition product you should have been.
Well, I can check the reprint.
Okay. Okay, so that was an error, and as it appears in the in all the undergraduate textbooks today, is the right way. Okay. Now, who did you? Westheimer showed up.
When I went back as an instructor in early 1936, both Westheimer and Whelan showed up quite soon.
Mm-hmm.
Westheimer had an office across the hall,
mm-hmm.
and Whelan one floor below, and we used to meet in my office for lunch more often than not. I happen to have the biggest office, haven't gotten there first.
Uh-huh.
And I think I learned a lot from these two people,
mm-hmm.
under these conditions.
Mm-hmm. Well, that must have been. Do you know? I know that Koresh had recruited Westheimer.
Yes.
Do you know who brought Whelan in?
Koresh.
He must have had some kind of vision in mind about building a strong physical organic group.
He did.
Uh-huh.
And although he had had conflicts with Pauling, we should give him credit for getting a recommendation from Pauling.
Who, this is?
Koresh.
Mm-hmm.
He almost certainly went through Pauling. Although it might have been done through somebody at Harvard who got in Westheimer.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I see. Okay. You say that he got a recommendation from Pauling in. Whelan had come from Pauling.
Whelan came from Pauling.
Mm-hmm.
And now the question is, how did Koresh find out that he wanted Whelan?
Yes.
And either he must have asked Pauling or he got a lead from Harvard.
Yes, that's right, because Whelan had worked with Conant at Harvard, so.
And Westheimer partly with Conant.
Yes, right. Who did you think the other important organic chemists were at that particular time, either organic chemists or physical chemists?
Well, I was at Chicago as an instructor from 1936 to 1942. Whom do you want to You want to talk about the
yeah.
whole time?
Well, we can talk about that period, and if you want to expand into a later period, that's fine too.
Well, there's no question that as far as influence and reputation were concerned, Adams and Adkins and was it L.I. Smith at Minnesota?
Mm-hmm.
And Conant, Bartlett was coming along fast. Cope was soon to come along fast if he hadn't already.
Mm-hmm.
These were the people with the influence.
What about that West Coast school you mentioned?
Lewis and Pauling. Young was doing pretty well. Lucas had turned out quite a number of prominent physical organic chemists. There was quite a number of people at Berkeley whose names I don't remember now and whom I saw seldom, but there was no doubt that they had a potent organization going out in Berkeley.
But mainly physical chemists as opposed to...
It was mostly physical and some inorganic chemists.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as far as I was concerned, the important people were in physical organic chemistry.
Mm-hmm.
And the important people were Westheimer and Wieland and Young and Winstein and Bartlett and Swain. And let me see. In general, the people who showed up at the first conference on mechanisms,
whatever
those might be. Ingold, of course, was leading the field abroad, and some of his contemporaries.
Mm-hmm.
Vaughn and Rust at Shell.
Were they already active at that time?
By 1940, they were.
Mm-hmm.
And they were starting to publish. And eventually they carried on much of the work that Karash had originated in Free Radicals and added a good deal of their own.
Mm-hmm.
I still see Fred Rust frequently, lives up in 50 miles away or so.
Mm-hmm.
Still active. He had a remarkably good record at Shell, although he never went beyond a BS academically.
That's
And our work has overlapped and complemented
mm-hmm.
from time to time since the 40s.
There was a fair amount of interest in the abnormal addition
problem. Well, I think of some more.
Oh, okay, sure.
There's, of course, Herb Brown and Skell. Both of whom were postdocs at Chicago with Karash.
Mm-hmm.
But Karash really gave the impetus to the free radical portion of physical organic chemistry
yeah.
in this country.
Yeah.
And most of it grew out of there, and this was my main interest. And so these are the people I know the best,
mm-hmm.
and I never did any business with Adams. He knew who I was, and he would speak to me, but we never had any particular friendship. I have heard from Speed Marvel since that they were considering me for a job at Illinois during the Adams regime,
mm-hmm.
but it never came across. I guess Marvel has promoted me there and in some other places.
Mm-hmm.
This is surmise, but I suspect that if Karash had made Roger Adams the editor of the Journal of Organic Chemistry, things might have gone a good deal better. But Adams and Marvel and many others were on the editorial board. And I think that Marvel appreciated Karash,
mm-hmm,
and was on reasonably good terms with him.
Who was the first editor of the Journal of Organic Chemistry?
Otto Reinmuth.
Okay, and he had a close relationship with Karash.
They had met at Maryland.
You felt that Karash really had the power to appoint the editors at that point. I don't know how that journal started.
He started up the journal and got a grant from someplace, mm-hmm, to start it.
I see.
And so this gave him a good deal of influence in getting it started.
Mm-hmm.
Karash softened as he was a young and feisty independent.
Mm-hmm.
When he started off, he softened a good deal. By the time he died, was more relaxed and on better terms with a good many more people. But I'm not aware that any of them funneled any good students to him.
Mm-hmm.
Nor did he send any to them.
There was a good deal of interest in the abnormal addition problem. Lucas and Young and Weinstein all were at least interested, and I guess a Japanese fellow by the name of Arusha Berra, Sherman, Quimby, and Sutherland. Did you feel any sense of competition with these other groups?
Not I, because most of what I thought were the most important things had been done,
mm-hmm,
by the time I quit activity in the field.
Okay. Well, what I was really talking about was, did the Karash group at that point in the late 30s feel that they were in competition, that they had to get things?
Karash had a very strong feeling of competition,
mm-hmm,
and I remember talking to another instructor in the department when I was a student, who was working on additions to butadiene.
Mm-hmm.
Irving Muscat was the name. And I talked to him about it at lunchtime, and Karash didn't like this afterwards. He said, I wished I wouldn't talk about this. He wanted to investigate that himself.
Oh, Muscat was working for someone else.
He was an independent instructor in this.
Oh, I see.
And he had been one of Stieglitz's students.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And a pretty good man, but because he didn't appreciate allylic rearrangements, I don't know that his work was worth very much, but I didn't know that at the time.
Mm-hmm. See. You also checked the 37 paper on the bromination of toluene in the presence of a free radical initiator, Escaradol. What did you feel was the most significant aspect of
this
paper?
For the first time, put the side chain substitution in the radical category and the nuclear substitution in the non-radical category, and perhaps also put the addition to the nucleus in the radical category. For the first time, I think, these things were sorted out.
Uh-huh. Okay, that makes that a pretty significant accomplishment then. Can you tell me how the peroxide review came about?
Peroxide review?
Yes. This is the 1940 review with Walling, and how did your recollections of how you decided to do that?
Well, I was Tarash's research assistant at the time. He got the invitation to write it and passed the job on to me and Wally. And so we did essentially all the jobs with some help from Senior. And then Tarash looked over the final draft and said it was a sound review, but it didn't give him a lift and so on. And he wasn't enthusiastic about it, but nevertheless, he let it be known that his name should appear on it first. And I said I didn't think that was the case. Mm-hmm. He said, well, if it isn't first, it doesn't go on at all. I said, okay, if that's the way you want it, that's the way it was.
I had heard another rumor that, that in fact it had appeared early and that some reviewer said that it shouldn't be on there, but I think you surely know that...
Well, the reviewer said that Kara shouldn't be on there.
Yes, but...
Well, the reviewer never saw it in that form, as far as I know.
Okay, fine. I'm glad to... I think that may straighten out that story.
I don't know that he had any permanent resentment about it, but I had some rather strong feelings. Mm-hmm. And in general... with very few exceptions, Karish's name appears first on the papers mm-hmm. he's on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, whether he wrote them or not, yeah.
On his book with the Grignard reactions, Reinmuth did essentially all of it.
And that's what I'd heard, I think, when I was a student there. And but it's still the Karish and Reinmuth, is that...
Yes, that's right.
Yeah. You were also permitted to have your own students.
Yes, after a while I was.
Okay, but you did. You also taught some courses.
Yes.
Okay, what kinds of courses did you teach?
I taught one quarter of elementary organic ones, but mostly I taught qualitative organic.